erupted. Mothers ran for their children and cooks dampened their fires, while the rest of the men and women scrambled after their weapons. Aragorn sprinted towards Saphira, even as she surged to her feet. Reaching out with his mind, he found Blodgarm, and once the elf lowered his defences somewhat, said, "Meet us at the north entrance!"
"We hear and obey, Shadeslayer."
Aragorn flung himself onto Saphira. The instant he got a leg over her neck, she jumped four rows of tents, landed, and then jumped a second time, her wings half furled, not flying, but rather bounding through the camp like a mountain cat crossing a fast-flowing river. The impact of each landing jarred Aragorn's teeth and spine and threatened to knock him off his perch. As they rose and fell, frightened warriors dodging out of their path, Aragorn contacted Triana and the other members of Dúvrangar Gata, identifying the location of each spellcaster and organizing them for battle. Someone who was not of Dúvrangar Gata touched his thoughts. He recoiled, slamming walls up around his consciousness, before he realized that it was Angela the herbalist, and allowed the contact. She said,
"I am with Nasuada and Elva. Nasuada wants you and Saphira to meet her at the north entrance as soon as we can. Yes, yes, we're on our way. What of Elva? Does she sense anything?"
"Pain. Great pain. Yours, the Vardens, the others. I'm sorry, she's not very coherent right now. It's too much for her to cope with. I'm going to put her to sleep until the violence is at an end."
Angela severed the connection. Like a carpenter, laying out and examining his tools before beginning a new project, Aragorn reviewed the wards he had placed around himself, Saphira, Nasuada, Arya, and Roran. They all seemed to be in order. Saphira slid to a stop before his tent, furrowing the packed earth with her talons. He leaped off her back, rolling as he struck the ground. Bouncing upright, he dashed inside, undoing his sword belt as he went. He dropped the belt and the attached falchion into the dirt, and scrabbling under his cot, retrieved his armour. The cold, heavy rings of the mail hauberk slid over his head and settled on his shoulders with a sound like falling coins. He tied on his arming cap, placed the coif over it, and then jammed his head into his helm. Snatching up the belt, he refastened it around his waist. With his greaves and his braces in his left hand, he hooked his little finger through the arm strap of his shield, grabbed Saphira's heavy saddle with his right hand, and burst out of the tent. Releasing his armor in a noisy clatter, he threw the saddle onto the mound of Saphira's shoulders and climbed after it. In his haste and excitement and his apprehension, he had trouble buckling the straps. Saphira shifted her stance.
"Hurry! You're taking too long!"
"Yes, I'm moving as fast as I can. It doesn't help, you're so blasted big!"
She growled. The camp swarmed with activity, men and dwarves streaming in jangling rivers toward the north, rushing to answer the summons of the war drums. Aragorn collected his abandoned armor off the ground, mounted Saphira, and settled into the saddle. With a flash of downswept wings, a jolt of acceleration, a blast of swirling air, and the bitter complaint of braces scraping against shield, Saphira took to the air. While they sped toward the northern edge of the camp, Aragorn strapped the greaves to his shins, holding himself on Saphira merely with the strength of his legs. The braces he wedged between his belly and the front of the saddle. The shield he hung from a neck spike. When the greaves were secure, he slid his legs through the row of leather loops on either side of the saddle, then tightened the slipknot on each loop. Aragorn's hand brushed against the belt of Beloth the Wise. He groaned, remembering that he had emptied the belt while healing Saphira in Helgrind. "Ah, I should have stored some energy in it."
"We'll be fine,"
said Saphira. He was just fitting on the braces when Saphira arched her wings, cupping the air with the translucent membranes, and reared, stalling to a standstill as she alighted upon the crest of one of the embankments that ringed the camp. Nasuada was already there, sitting upon her massive charger, Battlestorm. Beside her was Jormunda, also mounted, Arya on foot, and the current watch of the Nighthawks led by Khagra, one of the Urgals Aragorn had met on the Burning Plains. Blodgarm and the other elves emerged from the forest of tents behind them and stationed themselves close to Aragorn and Saphira. From a different part of the camp galloped King Orin and his retinue, reining in their prancing steeds as they drew near Nasawada. Close upon their heels came Narheim, chief of the dwarves and three of his warriors, the group of them riding ponies clad with leather and mail armour. Nargajvog ran out of the fields to the east, the Kull's thudding footsteps preceding his arrival by several seconds. Nasawada shouted an order, and the guards at the north entrance pulled aside the crude wooden gate to allow Gajvarg inside the camp, although if he had wanted, the Kull probably could have knocked open the gate by himself.
"Who challenges?"
growled Gajvarg, scaling the embankment with four inhumanly long strides. The horses shied away from the gigantic Urgal.
"Look!"
Nasawada pointed. Eragon was already studying their enemies. Roughly 2 miles away, five sleek boats, black as pitch, had landed upon the near bank of the Jeet River. From the boats there issued a swarm of men, garbed in the livery of Galbatorix's army. The host glittered like wind-whipped water under a summer's sun, as swords, spears, shields, helmets, and mail ringlets caught and reflected the light. Arya shaded her eyes with a hand and squinted at the soldiers.
"I put their number between 270 and 300.
"Why so few?" wondered Jormungandr. King Orin scowled. "Galbatorix cannot be mad enough to believe he can destroy us with such a paltry force." Orin pulled off his helm, which was in the shape of a crown, and dabbed his brow with the corner of his tunic. "We could obliterate that entire group and not lose a man."
"Maybe," said Nasawada. "Maybe not."
Gnawing on the words, Gajvarg added,
"The Dragon King is a false-tongued traitor, a rogue ram, but his mind is not feeble. He is cunning like a blood-hungry weasel."
The soldiers assembled themselves in orderly ranks, and then began marching toward the Varden. A messenger boy ran up to Nasawada. She bent in her saddle to listen, then dismissed him.
"Nargajvog, your people are safe within our camp. They are gathered near the east gate, ready for you to lead them."
Gajvog grunted, but remained where he was. Looking back at the approaching soldiers, Nasawada said,
"I can think of no reason to engage them in the open. We can pick them off with archers once they are within range. And when they reach our breastwork, they will break themselves against the trenches and the staves. Not a single one will escape alive," she concluded with evident satisfaction.
"When they have committed themselves," said Orin, "my horsemen and I could ride out and attack them from the rear. They will be so surprised, they will not even have a chance to defend themselves."
"The tide of battle may—"
Nasawada was replying, when the brazen horn that had announced the arrival of the soldiers sounded once more, so loudly that Eragon, Arya, and the rest of the elves covered their ears. Eragon winced with pain from the blast.
"Where is that coming from?"
he asked Saphira.
"A more important question, I think, is why the soldiers would want to warn us of their attack, if they are indeed responsible for this baying."
"Maybe it's a diversion, or—"
Eragon forgot what he was going to say, as he saw a stir of motion on the far side of the Jeet River, behind a veil of sorrowful willow trees. Red as a ruby dipped in blood. Red as iron hot to forge. Red as a burning ember of hate and anger. Thorn appeared above the languishing trees. And upon the back of the glittering dragon, there sat Murtagh, in his bright steel armour, thrusting Zarok high over his head.
"They have come for us," said Saphira.
Aragorn's gut twisted, and he felt Saphira's own dread, like a current of bilious water, running through his mind. Fire in the sky. As Eragon watched Thorn and Murtagh rise high in the northern sky, he heard Narheim whisper,
"Bazul!"
and then curse Murtagh for killing Hrothgar, the king of the dwarves. Arya spun away from the sight.
"Nasawada, your majesty," she said, her eyes flicking toward Orin. "You have to stop the soldiers before they reach the camp. You cannot allow them to attack our defenses. If they do, they will sweep over these ramparts like a storm-driven wave and wreak untold havoc in our midst among the tents, where we cannot maneuver effectively."
"Untold havoc?" Orin scoffed. "Have you so little confidence in our prowess, ambassador? Humans and dwarves may not be as gifted as elves, but we shall have no difficulty in disposing of these miserable wretches, I can assure you." The lines of Arya's face tightened.
"Your prowess is without compare, your majesty. I do not doubt it. But listen, this is a trap set for Aragorn and Saphira. They..." She flung an arm toward the rising figures of Thorn and Murtagh. "Have come to capture Aragorn and Saphira and spirit them away to Urubain. Galbatorix would not have sent so few men, unless he was confident they could keep the Varden occupied long enough for Murtagh to overwhelm Aragorn. Galbatorix must have placed spells on those men, spells to aid them in their mission. What those enchantments might be, I do not know, but of this I am certain. The soldiers are more than they appear, and we must prevent them from entering this camp."
Emerging from his initial shock, Aragorn said, "You don't want to let Thorn fly over the camp. He could set fire to half of it with a single pass." Nasawada clasped her hands over the pommel of her saddle, seemingly oblivious to Murtagh and Thorn and to the soldiers, who were now less than a mile away.
"But why not attack us while we were unawares?" she asked. "Why alert us to their presence?"
It was Nahim who answered.
"Because they would not want Aragorn and Saphira to get caught up in the fighting on the ground. No, unless I am mistaken, their plan is for Aragorn and Saphira to meet Thorn and Murtagh in the air, while the soldiers assail our position here."
"Is it wise, then, to accommodate their wishes, to willingly send Aragorn and Saphira into this trap?"
Nasawada raised an eyebrow.
"Yes," insisted Arya, "for we have an advantage they could not suspect."
She pointed at Blodgarm.
"This time Aragorn shall not face Murtagh alone. He will have the combined strength of 13 elves supporting him. Murtagh will not be expecting that. Stop the soldiers before they reach us, and you will have frustrated part of Galbatorix's design. Send Saphira and Aragorn up with the mightiest spellcasters of my race bolstering their efforts, and you will disrupt the remainder of Galbatorix's scheme."
"You have convinced me," said Nasawada. "However, the soldiers are too close for us to intercept them any distance from the camp with men on foot. Orin."
Before she finished, the king had turned his horse around and was racing toward the north gate of the camp. One of his retinue winded a trumpet, a signal for the rest of Orin's cavalry to assemble for a charge. To Garshvaag, Nasawada said,
"King Orin will require assistance. Send your rams to join him."
"Lady Nightstalker."
Throwing back his massive horned head, Garshvaag loosed a wild, wailing bellow. The skin on the back of Aragorn's arms and neck prickled as he listened to the Urgal's savage howl. With a snap of his jaws, Garshvaag ceased his belling and then grunted,
"They will come."
The cull broke into an earth-shattering trot and ran toward the gate where King Orin and his horsemen were gathered. Four of the Varden dragged open the gate. King Orin raised his sword, shouted, and galloped out of the camp, leading his men toward the soldiers in their gold-stitched tunics. A plume of cream-colored dust billowed out from underneath the hooves of the horses, obscuring the arrowhead-shaped formation from view.
"Jormunda," said Nasawada.
"Yes, my lady."
"Order 200 swordsmen and 100 spearmen after them, and have 50 archers station themselves 70 to 80 yards away from the fighting. I want these soldiers crushed, Jormunda, obliterated, ground out of existence. The men are to understand that no quarter is to be given or accepted."
Jormunda bowed.
and tell them that although I cannot join them in this battle on account of my arms, my spirit marches with them.
My lady. As Jormunda hurried off, Nahim urged his pony closer to Nasawada.
What of mine own people, Nasawada? What role shall we play?
Nasawada frowned at the thick, choking dust that drifted across the rolling expanse of grass.
You can help guard our perimeter. If the soldiers should somehow win free of...
She was forced to pause as 400 Urgals, more had arrived since the Battle of the Burning Plains, pounded out of the center of the camp, through the gate, and onto the field beyond, roaring incomprehensible war cries the whole while. As they vanished into the dust, Nasawada resumed speaking.
If the soldiers should win free, your axes will be most welcome in the lines.
The wind gusted toward them, carrying with it the screams of dying men and horses, the shivery sound of metal sliding over metal, the clink of swords glancing off helmets, the dull impact of spears on shields. And underlying it all, a horrible, humorless laughter that issued from a multitude of throats and continued without pause throughout the mayhem. It was, Aragorn thought, the laughter of the insane. Nahim pounded his fist against his hip.
By Morgothol, we are not ones to stand by idly when there is a fight to be had. Release us, Nasawada, and let us hew a few necks for you.
No, exclaimed Nasawada. No, no, and no. I have given you my orders, and I expect you to abide by them. This is a battle of horses and men and Urgals, and perhaps even dragons. It is not a fit place for dwarves. You would be trampled like children.
At Nahim's outraged oath, she raised a hand.
I am well aware you are fearsome warriors. No one knows that better than I, who fought beside you in Farthendur. However, not to put too fine a point on it, you are short by our standards, and I would rather not risk your warriors in a fray such as this, where your stature might be your undoing. Better to wait here, on the high ground, where you stand taller than anyone who tries to climb this berm, and let the soldiers come to you. If any soldiers do reach us, they shall be warriors of such tremendous skill. I want you and your people there to repel them. For one might as well try to uproot a mountain as defeat a dwarf.
Still displeased, Nahim grumbled some response. But whatever he said was lost as the Varden Nasawada had deployed filed through the cleft in the embankment where the gate had been. The noise of tramping feet and clattering equipment faded as the men drew away from the camp. Then the wind stiffened into a steady breeze, and from the direction of the fighting, the grim giggle again wafted toward them. A moment later, a mental shout of incredible strength overwhelmed Aragorn's defenses and tore through his consciousness, filling him with agony as he heard a man say,
Ah, no! Help me! They won't die! Angvard, take them! They won't die!
The link between their minds vanished then, and Aragorn swallowed hard, as he realized the man had been killed. Nasawada shifted in her saddle, her expression strained.
Who was that?
You heard him too?
It seems we all did, said Arya.
I think it was Bardon, one of the spellcasters who rides with King Orin, but...
Aragorn!
Thorn had been circling higher and higher while King Orin and his men engaged the soldiers. But now the dragon hung motionless in the sky, halfway between the soldiers and the camp, and Murtagh's voice, augmented with magic, echoed forth across the land.
Aragorn! I see you there! Hiding behind Nasawada's skirts. Come, fight me, Aragorn. It is your destiny. Or are you a coward, Shade Slayer?
Saphira answered for Aragorn by lifting her head and roaring even louder than Murtagh's thunderous speech, then discharging a 20-foot-long jet of crackling blue fire. The horses close to Saphira, including Nasawada's, bolted away,
leaving Saphira and Aragorn alone on the embankment with the elves. Walking over to Saphira, Arya placed a hand on Aragorn's left leg and looked up at him with her slanted green eyes.
"Accept this from me, Shortagal," she said, and he felt a surge of energy flow into him. "Eka Elrun Ono," he murmured to her.
Also in the ancient language, she said,
"Be careful, Aragorn. I would not want to see you broken by Murtagh. I..."
It seemed as if she were going to say more, but she hesitated, then removed her hand from his leg, and retreated to stand by Blodgarm.
"Fly well, Bjartskuler,"
the elves sang out as Saphira launched herself off the embankment. As Saphira winged her way toward Thorn, Aragorn joined his mind first with her and then with Arya, and through Arya with Blodgarm and the 11 other elves. By having Arya serve as the focal point for the elves, Aragorn was able to concentrate on the thoughts of Arya and Saphira. He knew them so well that their reactions would not distract him in the middle of a fight. Aragorn grasped the shield with his left hand and unsheathed his falchion, holding it upraised so he would not accidentally stab Saphira's wings as she flapped, nor slash her shoulders nor her neck, which were in constant motion.
"I'm glad I took the time last night to reinforce the falchion with magic," he said to Saphira and Arya.
"Let us hope your spells hold,"
Saphira answered.
"Remember," said Arya, "remain as close to us as you can. The more distance you place between us, the harder it is for us to maintain this bond with you."
Thorn did not dive at Saphira, nor otherwise attack her as she neared him, but rather slid away on rigid wings, allowing her to rise to his level unmolested. The two dragons balanced upon the thermals, facing each other across a gap of 50 yards, the tips of their barbed tails twitching, both of their muzzles wrinkled with ferocious snarls.
"He's bigger," observed Saphira. "It's not been 2 weeks since we last fought, and he has grown another 4 feet, if not more."
She was right. Thorn was longer from head to tail and deeper in the chest than he had been when they first clashed over the burning plains. He was barely older than a hatchling, but he was already nearly as large as Saphira.
Aragorn reluctantly shifted his gaze from the dragon to the rider. Murtagh was bareheaded, and his long black hair billowed behind him like a sleek mane. His face was hard, harder than Aragorn had ever seen before, and Aragorn knew that this time Murtagh would not, could not, show him mercy. The volume of his voice substantially reduced, but still louder than normal, Murtagh said,
"You and Saphira have caused us a great deal of pain, Aragorn. Galbatorix was furious with us for letting you go. And after the two of you killed the Razak, he was so angry he slew 5 of his servants, and then turned his wrath upon Thorn and me. We have both suffered horribly on account of you. We shall not do so again."
He drew back his arm, as if Thorn were about to lunge forward and Murtagh were preparing to slash at Aragorn and Saphira.
"Wait!" cried Aragorn. "I know of a way you can both free yourselves of your oaths to Galbatorix."
An expression of desperate longing transformed Murtagh's features, and he lowered Zarok a few inches. Then he scowled and spat toward the ground and shouted,
"I don't believe you. It's not possible."
"It is. Just let me explain." Murtagh seemed to be struggling with himself, and for a while Aragorn thought he might refuse. Swinging his head around, Thorn looked back at Murtagh, and something passed between them.
"Blast you, Aragorn," said Murtagh, and lay Zarok across the front of his saddle. "Blast you for baiting us with this. We had already made peace with our lot, and you have to tantalize us with the spectre of a hope we had abandoned. If this proves to be a false hope, brother, I swear I'll cut off your right hand before we present you to Galbatorix. You won't need it for what you will be doing in Urabain."
A threat of his own occurred to Aragorn, but he suppressed it. Lowering the falchion, he said,
Galbatorix would not have told you, but when I was among the elves, Aragorn, do not reveal anything more about us, exclaimed Arya. I learned that if your personality changes, so does your true name in the ancient language. Who you are isn't cast in iron, Murtagh. If you and Thorn can change something about yourselves, your oaths will no longer bind you, and Galbatorix will lose his hold on you.
Thorn drifted several yards closer to Saphira.
Why didn't you mention this before? Murtagh demanded.
I was too confused at the time.
A scant 50 feet separated Thorn and Saphira by then. The red dragon's snarl had subsided to a faint, warning curl of his upper lip, and in his sparkling crimson eyes appeared a vast, puzzled sadness, as if he hoped Saphira or Aragorn might know why he had been brought into the world merely so Galbatorix could enslave him, abuse him, and force him to destroy other beings' lives. The tip of Thorn's nose twitched as he sniffed at Saphira. She sniffed him in return, and her tongue darted out of her mouth as she tasted his scent. Pity for Thorn welled up inside Aragorn and Saphira together, and they wished they could speak with him directly, but they dared not open their minds to him. With so little distance between them, Aragorn noticed the bundles of cords that bridged Murtagh's neck, and the forked vein that pulsed in the middle of his forehead.
I am not evil, said Murtagh. I've done the best I could under the circumstances. I doubt you would have survived as well as I did if our mother had seen fit to leave you in Urbane and hide me in Carvajal.
Perhaps not.
Murtagh banged his breastplate with his fist.
Aha! Then how am I supposed to follow your advice? If I am already a good man, if I have already done as well as could be expected, how can I change? Must I become worse than I am? Must I embrace Galbatorix's darkness in order to free myself of it? That hardly seems like a reasonable solution. If I succeeded in so altering my identity, you would not like who I had become, and you would curse me as strongly as you curse Galbatorix now.
Frustrated, Aragorn said,
Yes, but you do not have to become better or worse than you are now, only different. There are many kinds of people in the world, and many ways to behave honorably. Look at someone whom you admire, but who has chosen paths other than your own through life, and model your actions upon his. It may take a while, but if you can shift your personality enough, you can leave Galbatorix and you can leave the Empire, and you and Thorn could join us in the Varden, where you would be free to do as you wish.
What of your own oaths to avenge Hrothgar's death?
Saphira asked. Aragorn ignored her. Murtagh sneered at him.
So you are asking me to be that which I am not. If Thorn and I are to save ourselves, we must destroy our current identities. Your cure is worse than our affliction.
I'm asking you to allow yourself to grow into something other than you are now. It's a difficult thing to do, I know, but people remake themselves all the time. Let go of your anger, for one, and you can turn your back on Galbatorix once and for all.
Let go of my anger, Murtagh laughed. I'll let go of my anger when you forget yours over the Empire's role in the death of your uncle and the raising of your farm. Anger defines us, Aragorn, and without it you and I would be a feast for maggots.
Still, his eyes half-lidded, Murtagh tapped Zarok's crossguard, the cords in his neck softening, although the vein that split his forehead remained swollen as ever.
The concept is intriguing, I admit. Perhaps we can work on it together. When we are in Urubane. That is, if the king permits us to be alone with each other. Of course, he may decide to keep us permanently separated. I would, if I were in his position.
Aragorn tightened his fingers around the hilt of the falchion.
You seem to think we will accompany you to the capital.
Oh, but you will, brother.
A crooked smile stretched Murtagh's mouth.
Even if we wanted to, Thorn and I could not change who we are in an instant. Until such time as we may have that opportunity, we shall remain beholden to Galbatorix, and he has ordered us in no uncertain terms to bring him the two of you. Neither of us is willing to brave the king's displeasure again. We defeated you once before. It will be no great achievement to do so again.
A spurt of flame escaped from between Saphira's teeth, and Aragorn had to stifle a similar response in words. If he lost control of his temper now, bloodshed would be unavoidable.
Please, Murtagh, Thorn, will you not at least try what I've suggested? Have you no desire to resist Galbatorix? You will never cast off your chains unless you are willing to defy him.
You underestimate Galbatorix, Aragorn, growled Murtagh. He has been creating nameslaves for over 100 years, ever since he recruited our father. Do you think he is unaware that a person's true name may vary over the course of his life? He is sure to have taken precautions against that eventuality. If my true name were to change this very moment, or Thorn's, most likely it would trigger a spell that would alert Galbatorix to the change and force us to return to him in Urubain, so he could bind us to him again.
But only if he could guess your new names.
He is most adept at the practice.
Murtagh raised Zarok off the saddle.
We may make use of your suggestion in the future, but only after careful study and preparation, so that Thorn and I do not regain our freedom, only to have Galbatorix steal it back from us directly afterward.
He hefted Zarok, the sword's iridescent blade shimmering.
Therefore, we have no choice but to take you with us to Urubain. Will you go peacefully?
Unable to contain himself any longer, Aragorn said, I would sooner tear out my own heart.
Better to tear out my hearts, Murtagh replied, then stabbed Zarok overhead and shouted a wild war cry.
Roaring in unison, Thorn flapped twice, fast, to climb above Saphira. He twisted in a half-circle as he rose, so his head would be over Saphira's neck, where he could immobilize her with a single bite at the base of her skull. Saphira did not wait for him. She tipped forward, rotating her wings in their shoulder sockets, so that for the span of a heartbeat she pointed straight down, her wings still parallel with the dust-smeared ground, supporting her entire unstable weight. Then she pulled in her right wing, and swung her head to the left and her tail to the right, spinning in a clockwise direction. Her muscular tail struck Thorn across his left side, just as he sailed over her, breaking his wing in 5 separate places. The jagged ends of Thorn's hollow flight bones pierced his hide and stuck out between his flashing scales. Globules of steaming dragon blood rained down upon Aragorn and Saphira. A droplet splashed against the back of Aragorn's coif and seeped through the mail to his bare skin. It burned like hot oil. He scrabbled at his neck, trying to wipe off the blood. His roar converting into a whine of pain, Thorn tumbled past Saphira, unable to stay aloft.
Well done!
Aragorn shouted to Saphira as she righted herself. Aragorn watched from above, as Murtagh removed a small round object from his belt and pressed it against Thorn's shoulder. Aragorn sensed no surge of magic from Murtagh, but the object in his hand flared, and Thorn's broken wing jerked as his bones snapped back in place, and muscles and tendons rippled, and the tears in them vanished. Lastly, the wounds in Thorn's hide sealed over.
How did he do that?
Aragorn exclaimed. Arya answered,
He must have imbued the item with a spell of healing beforehand. We should have thought of that ourselves.
His injuries mended. Thorn halted his fall and began to ascend toward Saphira with prodigious speed, searing the air in front of him with a boiling spear of sullen red fire. Saphira dove at him, spiralling around the tower of flame. She snapped at Thorn's neck, causing him to shy away, and raked his shoulders and chest with her front claws, and buffeted him with her huge wings. The edge of her right wing clipped Murtagh, knocking him sideways in his saddle. He recovered quickly and slashed at Saphira, opening up a 3-foot rent in the membrane of her wing. Hissing, Saphira kicked Thorn away with her hind legs and released a jet of fire, which split and passed harmlessly on either side of Thorn. Aragorn felt, through Saphira, the throbbing of her wound. He stared at the bloody gash, thoughts racing. If they had been fighting any magician besides Murtagh, he would not dare to cast a spell while engaged in hostilities, for the magician would most likely believe he or she was about to die, and would counter with a desperate, all-out magical attack. It was different with Murtagh. Aragorn knew Galbatorix had ordered Murtagh to capture, not kill, him and Saphira. "No matter what I do," Aragorn thought, "he will not attempt to slay me." It was safe, then, Aragorn decided, to heal Saphira. And, he belatedly realized, he could attack Murtagh with any spells he desired, and Murtagh would not be able to respond with deadly force. But he wondered why Murtagh had used an enchanted object to cure Thorn's hurts, instead of casting the spell himself. Saphira said,
"Perhaps he wants to preserve his strength, or perhaps he wanted to avoid frightening you. It would not please Galbatorix if by using magic Murtagh caused you to panic and you killed yourself or Thorn or Murtagh as a result. Remember, the king's great ambition is to have all four of us under his command, not dead, where we are beyond his reach."
"That must be it," Aragorn agreed. As he prepared to mend Saphira's wing, Arya said,
"Wait, do not."
"What? Why? Can't you feel Saphira's pain?
Let my brethren and I tend to her. It will confuse Murtagh, and this way the effort shall not weaken you."
"Aren't you too far away to work such a change?"
"Not when the lot of us pool our resources. And Aragorn, we recommend you refrain from striking at Murtagh with magic until he attacks with mind or magic himself. He may yet be stronger than you, even with the 13 of us lending our strength. We do not know. It is better not to test yourself against him until there is no other alternative."
"And if I cannot prevail?"
"All of Alagazia will fall to Galbatorix."
Aragorn sensed Arya concentrating. Then the cut in Saphira's wing ceased weeping tears of blood, and the raw edges of the delicate cerulean membrane flowed together without a scab or a scar. Saphira's relief was palpable. With a tinge of fatigue, Arya said,
"Guard yourself better if you can. This was not easy."
After Saphira had kicked him, Thorn flailed and lost altitude. He must have assumed that Saphira meant to harry him downward, where it would be harder for him to evade her attacks, because he fled west a quarter of a mile. When he finally noticed that Saphira was not pursuing him, he circled up and around until he was a good 1,000 feet higher than she was. Drawing in his wings, Thorn hurtled toward Saphira, flames flickering in his open maw, his ivory talons outstretched, Murtagh brandishing Zarok on his back. Aragorn nearly lost his grip on the falchion as Saphira folded one wing and flipped upside down with a dizzying wrench, then extended the wing again to slow her descent. If he craned his head backward, Aragorn could see the ground below them. Or was it above them? He gritted his teeth and concentrated on maintaining his hold on the saddle. Thorn and Saphira collided. And to Aragorn, it was as if Saphira had crashed into the side of a mountain. The force of the impact drove him forward, and he banged his helmet against the neck spike in front of him, denting the thick steel. Dazed, he hung loose from the saddle and watched as the disks of the heavens and the earth reversed themselves, spinning without a discernible pattern. He felt Saphira shudder as Thorn battered her exposed belly. Aragorn wished there had been time to dress her in the armor the dwarves had given her. A glittering ruby leg appeared around Saphira's shoulder, mauling her with bloody claws. Without thinking, Aragorn hacked at it, shattering a line of scales and severing a bundle of tendons. Three of the toes on the foot went limp. Aragorn hacked again. Snarling, Thorn disengaged from Saphira. He arched his neck, and Aragorn heard an inrush of air as the stocky dragon filled his lungs. Aragorn ducked, burying his face in the corner of his elbow. A ravening inferno engulfed Saphira. The heat of the fire could not harm them. Aragorn's wards prevented that. But the torrent of incandescent flames was still blinding. Saphira veered to the left, out of the churning fire. By then Murtagh had repaired the damage to Thorn's leg, and Thorn again flung himself at Saphira, grappling with her as they plummeted in sickening lurches toward the grey tents of the Varden. Saphira managed to clamp her teeth on the horned crest that projected from the rear of Thorn's head, despite the points of bone that punctured her tongue. Thorn bellowed and thrashed like a hooked fish, trying to pull away, but he was no match for the iron muscles of Saphira's jaws. The two dragons drifted downward side by side like a pair of interlocked leaves. Aragorn leaned over and slashed crosswise at Murtagh's right shoulder, not intending to kill him, but rather to injure him severely enough to end the fight. Unlike during their clash over the burning plains, Aragorn was well rested. With his arm as fast as an elf's, he was confident Murtagh would be defenseless before him. Murtagh lifted his shield and blocked the falchion. His reaction was so unexpected, Aragorn faltered, then barely had time to recoil and parry as Murtagh retaliated, swinging Zarok at him, the blade humming through the air with inordinate speed. The stroke jarred Aragorn's shoulder. Pressing the attack, Murtagh struck at Aragorn's wrist, and then, when Aragorn dashed aside Zarok, thrust underneath Aragorn's shield and stabbed through the fringe of his mail hauberk and his tunic and the waist of his breeches, and into his left hip. The tip of Zarok embedded itself in bone. The pain shocked Aragorn like a splash of frigid water, but it also lent his thoughts a preternatural clarity and sent a burst of uncommon strength coursing through his limbs. As Murtagh withdrew Zarok, Aragorn yelled and lunged at Murtagh, who, with a flip of his wrist, trapped the falchion beneath Zarok. Murtagh bared his teeth in a sinister smile. Without pause, Aragorn yanked the falchion free, feinted toward Murtagh's right knee, then whipped the falchion in the opposite direction and sliced Murtagh across the cheek. "You should have worn a helmet," said Aragorn. They were so close to the ground then, only a few hundred feet, that Saphira had to release Thorn, and the two dragons separated before Aragorn and Murtagh could exchange any more blows. As Saphira and Thorn spiraled upward, racing each other toward a pearl-white cloud gathering over the tents of the Varden, Aragorn lifted his hauberk and tunic and examined his hip. A fist-sized patch of skin was discolored where Zarok had crushed the mail against his flesh. In the middle of the patch was a thin red line, 2 inches long, where Zarok had pierced him. Blood oozed from the wound, soaking the top of his breeches. Being hurt by Zarok, a sword that had never failed him in moments of danger and that he still regarded as rightfully his, unsettled him. To have his own weapon turned against him was wrong. It was a warping of the world, and his every instinct rebelled against it. Saphira wobbled as she flew through an eddy of air, and Aragorn winced, renewed pain lancing up his side. It was fortunate, he concluded, that they were not fighting on foot, for he did not think his hip would bear his weight. "Arya," he said, "do you want to heal me, or shall I do it myself and let Murtagh stop me if he can?" "We shall attend to it for you," Arya said. "You may be able to catch Murtagh by surprise if he believes you are still wounded." "Oh, wait!" "Why?" "I have to give you permission. Otherwise my wards will block the spell." The phrase did not leap into Aragorn's mind at first, but eventually he remembered the construction of the safeguard and in the ancient language whispered, "I agree to let Arya, daughter of Islanzadi, cast a spell on me." "We shall have to talk about your wards when you are not so distracted. What if you were unconscious? How could we minister to you then?" It seemed like a good idea after the burning plains.
Murtagh immobilized us both with magic. I don't want him or anyone else to be able to cast spells on us without our consent. Nor should they, but there are more elegant solutions than yours.
Aragorn squirmed in the saddle as the elf's magic took effect, and his hip began to tingle and itch as if covered with flea bites. When the itching ceased, he slid a hand under his tunic and was delighted to feel nothing but smooth skin.
Right, he said, rolling his shoulders. Let us teach them to fear our names.
The pearl-white cloud looming large before them, Saphira twisted to the left, and then, while Thorn was struggling to turn, plunged into the heart of the cloud. Everything went cold and damp and white. Then Saphira shot out of the far side, exiting only a few feet above and behind Thorn. Roaring with triumph, Saphira dropped upon Thorn and seized him by the flanks, sinking her claws deep into his thighs and along his spine. She snaked her head forward, caught Thorn's left wing in her mouth, and clamped down with the snick of razor teeth cutting through meat. Thorn writhed and screamed, a horrible sound Aragorn had not suspected dragons were capable of producing.
I have him, said Saphira. I can tear off his wing, but I would rather not. Whatever you are going to do, do it before we fall too far.
His face pale beneath smeared gore, Murtagh pointed at Aragorn with Zarok, the sword trembling in the air, and a mental ray of immense power invaded Aragorn's consciousness. The foreign presence groped after his thoughts, seeking to grab a hold and subdue them and subject them to Murtagh's approval. As on the burning plains, Aragorn noticed that Murtagh's mind felt as if it contained multitudes, as if a confused chorus of voices was murmuring beneath the turmoil of Murtagh's own thoughts. Aragorn wondered if Murtagh had a group of magicians assisting him, even as the elves were him. Difficult as it was, Aragorn emptied his mind of everything but an image of Zarok. He concentrated on the sword with all his might, smoothing the plane of his consciousness into the calm of meditation, so Murtagh would find no purchase with which to establish a foothold in Aragorn's being. And when Thorn flailed underneath them and Murtagh's attention wavered for an instant, Aragorn launched a furious counterattack, clutching at Murtagh's consciousness. The two of them strove against each other in grim silence while they fell, wrestling back and forth in the confines of their minds. Sometimes Aragorn seemed to gain the upper hand, sometimes Murtagh, but neither could defeat the other. Aragorn glanced at the ground, rushing up at them, and realized that their contest would have to be decided by other means. Lowering the falchion so it was level with Murtagh, Aragorn shouted, "Letter!" The same spell Murtagh had used on him during their previous confrontation. It was a simple piece of magic. It would do nothing more than hold Murtagh's arms and torso in place, but it would allow them to test themselves directly against one another, and determine which of them had the most energy at their disposal. Murtagh mouthed a counterspell, the words lost in Thorn snarling and in the howling of the wind. Aragorn's pulse raced as the strength ebbed from his limbs. When he had nearly depleted his reserves and was faint from the effort, Saphira and the elves poured the energy from their bodies into his, maintaining the spell for him. Across from him, Murtagh had originally appeared smug and confident, but as Aragorn continued to restrain him, Murtagh's scowl deepened and he pulled back his lips, baring his teeth, and the whole while they besieged each other's minds. Aragorn felt the energy Arya was funneling into him decrease once, then twice, and he assumed that two of the spellweavers under Blodgarm's command had fainted.
Murtagh can't hold out much longer, he thought, and then had to struggle to regain control of his mind, for his lapse of concentration had granted Murtagh entry. The force from Arya and the other elves declined by half, and even Saphira began to shake with exhaustion. Just as Aragorn became convinced Murtagh would prevail, Murtagh uttered an anguished shout, and a great weight seemed to lift off Aragorn,
as Murtagh's resistance vanished. Murtagh appeared astonished by Aragorn's success.
"What now?" Aragorn asked Arya and Saphira. "Do we take them as hostages? Can we?"
"Now," said Saphira. "I must fly."
She released Thorn and pushed herself away from him, raising her wings and laboriously flapping as she endeavoured to keep them aloft. Aragorn looked over her shoulder and had a brief impression of horses and sun-streaked grass hurtling toward them. Then it was as if a giant struck him from underneath, and his sight went black. The next thing Aragorn saw was a swath of Saphira's neck scales an inch or two in front of his nose. The scales shone like cobalt blue ice. Aragorn was dimly aware of someone reaching out to his mind from across a great distance, their consciousness projecting an intense sense of urgency. As his faculties returned, he recognized the other person as Arya. She said,
"End the spell, Aragorn! It will kill us all if you keep it up! End it! Murtagh is too far away! Wake up, Aragorn, or you will pass into the void!"
With a jolt, Aragorn sat upright in the saddle, barely noticing that Saphira was crouched amid a circle of King Orin's horsemen. Arya was nowhere to be seen. Now that he was alert again, Aragorn could feel the spell he had cast on Murtagh still draining his strength, and in ever-increasing amounts. If not for the aid of Saphira and Arya and the other elves, he would have already died. Aragorn released the magic, then looked for Thorn and Murtagh on the ground.
"There!"
said Saphira, and motioned with her snout. Low in the northwestern sky, Aragorn saw Thorn's glittering shape, the dragon winging his way up the Jeet River, fleeing toward Galbatorix's army some miles distant.
"How?"
"Murtagh healed Thorn again, and Thorn was lucky enough to land on the slope of a hill. He ran down it, then took off before you regained consciousness."
From across the rolling landscape, Murtagh's magnified voice boomed,
"Do not think you have won, Aragorn, Saphira. We shall meet again, a promise, and Thorn and I shall defeat you then, for we shall be even stronger than we are now."
Aragorn clenched his shield and his falchion so tightly he bled from underneath his fingernails.
"Do you think you can overtake him?"
"I could, but the elves would not be able to help you from so far away, and I doubt we could prevail without their support."
"We might be able—"
Aragorn stopped and pounded his leg in frustration.
"Blast it! I'm an idiot! I forgot about Arryn! We could have used the energy in Brom's ring to help defeat them."
"You had other things on your mind. Anyone might have made the same mistake."
"Maybe. But I still wish I had thought of Arryn sooner. We could still use it to capture Thorn and Murtagh."
"And then what?"
asked Saphira.
"How could we keep them as prisoners? Would you drug them, like Durza drugged you in Gilead? Or do you just want to kill them?"
"I don't know. We could help them to change their true names, to break their oaths to Galbatorix. Letting them wander around unchecked, though, is too dangerous."
Arya said,
"In theory, you are right, Aragorn, but you are tired. Saphira is tired, and I would rather Thorn and Murtagh escape than we lose the two of you because you were not at your best."
But we do not have the capabilities to safely detain a dragon and rider for an extended period, and I do not think killing Thorn and Murtagh would be as easy as you assume, Aragorn. Be grateful we have driven them off, and rest easy, knowing we can do so again when next they dare to confront us."
So saying, she withdrew from his mind. Aragorn watched until Thorn and Murtagh had vanished from sight. Then he sighed and rubbed Saphira's neck.
"I could sleep for a fortnight."
"As could I."
"You should be proud. You outflew Thorn at nearly every turn.
Yes, I did, didn't I?
She preened.
It was hardly a fair competition. Thorn does not have my experience.
Nor your talent, I should think. Twisting her neck, she licked the upper part of his right arm, the male hauberk tinkling, and then gazed down at him with sparkling eyes. He managed a ghost of a smile.
I suppose I should have expected it, but it still surprised me that Murtagh was as fast as me. More magic on the part of Galbatorix, no doubt.
Why did your wards fail to deflect Zarok, though? They saved you from worse blows when we fought the Razak.
I'm not sure. Murtagh or Galbatorix might have invented a spell I had not thought to guard against. Or it could just be that Zarok is a rider's blade, and as Glader said...
The swords Runan forged excel at...
Cutting through enchantments of every kind, and...
It is only rarely they are...
Affected by magic, exactly.
Aragorn stared at the streaks of dragon blood on the flat of the falchion, weary.
When will we be able to defeat our enemies on our own? I couldn't have killed Durza if Arya hadn't broken the Star Sapphire, and we were only able to prevail over Murtagh and Thorn with the help of Arya and 12 others.
We must become more powerful.
Yes, but how? How has Galbatorix amassed his strength? Has he found a way to feed off the bodies of his slaves, even when he is hundreds of miles away? Oh, I don't know.
A runnel of sweat coursed down Aragorn's brow and into the corner of his right eye. He wiped off the perspiration with the palm of his hand, then blinked, and again noticed the horsemen gathered around him and Saphira.
What are they doing here?
Looking beyond, he realized Saphira had landed close to where King Orin had intercepted the soldiers from the boats. Not far off to her left, hundreds of men, Urgals and horses, milled about in panic and confusion. Occasionally the clatter of swords or the scream of a wounded man broke through the uproar, accompanied by snatches of demented laughter.
I think they are here to protect us,
said Saphira.
Us? From what? Why haven't they killed the soldiers yet? Where?
Aragorn abandoned his question as Arya, Blodgarm, and 4 other haggard-looking elves sprinted up to Saphira from the direction of the camp. Raising a hand in greeting, Aragorn called, Arya, what's happened? No one seems to be in command. To Aragorn's alarm, Arya was breathing so hard she was unable to speak for a few moments. Then,
the soldiers proved more dangerous than we anticipated. We do not know how. Duvrangar Gata has heard nothing but gibberish from Orin's spellcasters.
Regaining her breath, Arya started examining Saphira's cuts and bruises. Before Aragorn could ask more, a collection of excited cries from within the maelstrom of warriors drowned out the rest of the tumult, and he heard King Orin shout,
Back! Back, all of you! Archers, hold the line! Blast you, no one move! We have him!
Saphira had the same thought as Aragorn. Gathering her legs under her, she leaped over the ring of horsemen, startling the horses so they bucked and ran, and made her way across the corpse-strewn battlefield toward the sound of King Orin's voice, brushing aside men and Urgals alike as if they were so many stalks of grass. The rest of the elves hurried to keep up, swords and bows in hand. Saphira found Orin sitting on his charger at the leading edge of the tightly packed warriors, staring at a lone man 40 feet away. The king was flushed and wild-eyed, his armor besmirched with filth from combat. He had been wounded under his left arm, and the shaft of a spear protruded several inches from his right thigh. When Saphira's approach caught his attention, his face registered sudden relief.
Good, good, you're here,
he muttered, as Saphira crawled abreast of his charger. We needed you, Saphira. And you, Shadeslayer? One of the archers edged forward a few inches. Orin waved his sword at him and yelled,
Back! I'll have the head of anyone who doesn't remain where he is. I swear by Angvard's crown.
Then Orin resumed glaring at the lone man. Aragorn followed his gaze. The man was a soldier of medium height, with a purple birthmark on his neck and brown hair plastered flat by the helmet he had been wearing. His shield was a splintered ruin. His sword was notched, bent, and broken, missing the last 6 inches. River mud caked his